Lord says that work in devotional service is better than dry mental speculation. Devotional service is easier than the latter, because being transcendental in nature, it frees one from reaction. In the second chapter, preliminary knowledge of the soul and its entanglement in the material body were explained. How to get out of this material encagement by buddhi yoga or devotional service was also explained therein. In the third chapter, it was explained that a person who is situated on the platform of knowledge no longer has any duties to perform. And in the fourth chapter, the Lord told Arjuna that all kinds of sacrificial work culminate in knowledge. However, at the end of the fourth chapter, the Lord advised Arjuna to wake up and fight, being situated in perfect knowledge. Therefore, by simultaneously stressing the importance of both work in devotion and inaction in knowledge, Krishna has perplexed Arjuna and confused his determination. Arjuna understands that renunciation in knowledge involves cessation of all kinds of work performed as sense activities. But if one performs work in devotional service, then how is work stopped? In other words, he thinks that sannyas or renunciation in knowledge should be altogether free from all kinds of activity, because work and renunciation appear to him to be incompatible. He appears not to have understood that work in full knowledge is not non-reactive and is therefore the same as inaction. He inquires therefore whether he should cease work altogether or work with full knowledge. Chapter 5, Text 1. Arjuna uvacha sanyasam karmaram krishna punar yogam cha shangshasi yat chaya etayor ekam tanme bruhi sunishtitam. Arjuna said, O Krishna, first of all you ask me to renounce work, and then again you recommend work with devotion. Now will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial? Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hari Hari. Arjuna is expressing a misconception which is common even up to the present day, that spiritual life means doing nothing. People think that it's spiritual to do nothing, because work is seen to generate results. All whatever work is done generates some result, and everyone works to get some kind of result. And everyone in material consciousness thinks that we should work, and as a result of from the results of the work, we shall enjoy material life. So people think that it's spiritual to stop work, because work, they think that work means something which is performed with the goal in mind of getting something for us to enjoy. So they think that spiritual means to stop work, and then if we stop work, then it's not material. They can only conceive of work as being material. Krishna, of course, will clarify for Arjuna that work, he's already explained actually, but he will explain in more detail, that work is not necessarily material, that the result should be offered to Krishna, or one should work for the satisfaction of Krishna. Now, this again, for those who are attempting to come to the spiritual platform but fail to grasp knowledge of Krishna, they can't understand this either, because they think that in spiritual existence there's nothing to do, nothing to enjoy, and God, he's not, because material life is full of work, then God, there's nothing to do for him, there's no work to do for him. They conceive of God being the negation of everything material, the total negation. So they conceive that if there's work in this material world, there cannot be work in spiritual existence. If we are working, then God cannot be working. If we're enjoying, then God cannot be enjoying. So it's a misconception that work should be performed for the pleasure of Krishna, because He is the supreme enjoyer. But people can't understand this, because they, mostly when people think of God, they either think of Him in two ways, in a personal way, as an order supplier. Here's my shopping list. Give me this, give me that, give me... Or they conceive of God as a, literally as a non-entity. When we say a non-entity, we mean someone who's just, it means an insignificant person, right? When we say non-entity. You say that in American? Yeah, so. But they literally conceive of God as a non-entity, that He has no form, qualities, activities, desires, because people think of that we have desires, so that desire is for us to enjoy, and so that's material. So if God, He cannot have such desires, so they conceive of God as being some amorphous light shining somewhere, or God is love, non-defined, just love. Not directed towards any particular person, but in an impersonal concept. So if they think of God as the order supply, mostly people who say they believe in God, just like you see everywhere, God bless America. It's very popular in America to say this. God bless America. Why only America? Because we're in America and God should bless us, because we're American. And God Himself, He must be voting for George Bush or something. He must be flying a flag, flying an American flag, because God, the other idea is that we're American and God should bless us to enjoy life. That's a, I saw today some bumpers, God bless America and God protect our troops. But then the troops in Iraq, who's attacking them, they're praying to Allah that give us the strength to kill these troops. So everyone thinks that God should be in our service. They conceive of God as, Prabhupada very nicely gave the term, order supplier. He should do what we want. God should bless our... God bless me that I can win the election, so I can go on... That's basically the idea, that we want to enjoy, and God is our Father. Prabhupada very nicely analyzed this, that if we think of God as the Father, that means He's our servant, because the Father actually serves the children. So Prabhupada very nicely analyzed that it's better to become the Father of God, which is impossible by material calculation, because Pitahamasya Jagato Mata Dhata Pitamaha. He is the Father, the Mother, the Root, He is everything in the whole creation. But if we are to actually serve Him, then how can we serve? People say to love God, but they don't have the conception of serving Him. They have the idea, when people say love God, they have the idea that we should love Him for what He gives to us. Just like we love our parents because they give to us. It's actually a very, very selfish outlook, that we love someone because what they give us. And we can see in the Western countries that especially people have very, very much misconceptions of how to raise their children, because they think we love our children by giving them toys and indulging them and giving them so many things, but never any discipline or training. So because they, in the Western world especially, the society is so materialistic that people think that they equate happiness with sense enjoyment, and they equate love with giving sense, the opportunity for sense enjoyment to others. So we think we love someone because they give us sense enjoyment, and we think of loving someone as giving them the opportunity for sense enjoyment. So when we think of loving God, we think also that, well, we can't do anything for Him. We love God and He gives us. We're His children and He just gives us so many things because we love Him. But actually, this concept of love is very shallow. Because love doesn't mean what taking from others, but love means giving. Love means to serve. Now, how can we serve God? What gift can you give to someone who has got everything? What will you give? I remember years ago, I was about 8 years old, around in the Christmas season, I saw an advertisement in the Daily Telegraph, which is the newspaper in England that the rich people, they read. So there was an advertisement, the perfect gift for the person who has everything. And it was I don't know if it was supposed to be a joke or what, but it was a belly button cleaner. Belly button, do you say that in America and English? A belly button cleaner. So what will you give to someone who's got everything? God, He's got everything. So if someone invents a belly button cleaner, definitely God's going to have one too. Because He's got everything. He's natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. There's nothing for Him to do. He's got everything. So what do you do for someone who's got everything? You don't. You just take things from them, that's all. That's the conception. So the whole concept of God, when people say, we believe in God, we should love God, but they don't know what it means to love. Because love means to serve. So this misconception comes that spiritual life means doing nothing. But actually spiritual life means to understand the Supreme Spiritual Person and to serve Him. And service means activity. Now what can we do for God? What can you do for someone who Himself does everything and we can't do anything without His sanction? We can't even lift our little finger without His sanction. We take it for granted could you just go over there? Could you just go over there? Okay. Okay. Now please come and sit back again. Alright. This is a practical demonstration. Now, when you went there, did you think to tell your muscles, now this muscle should move, that muscle should move? No, you just go there and come back. You think, what's He telling me to do that for? That's what you were thinking, right? You weren't thinking, this muscle should move and that muscle should move. We just do it automatically, but we don't have the power to move even a little finger without the sanction of God. I had this experience one cold winter morning in India where they don't have heating. So when it's cold, you feel it. Okay, they have it some places now. In Baroda, Gujarat. Not as cold as your Vrindavan, but cold enough in the winter. So I woke up in the morning, I was wearing a shirt, and I got up and I couldn't move my arm at all. So I just couldn't move it. I couldn't get my shirt off, couldn't take a bath, couldn't brush my teeth with my right. I couldn't get the toothpaste, trying to do everything with my left. Couldn't move it at all because of the cold. And then we just take it for granted. You get up in the morning and you go to the shower and brush your teeth and take a bath and go to Mangaladi, right? But if you may just suddenly be paralyzed and you can't move at all. So we take it for granted that we can do everything, but we can't do anything, not even the slightest little thing, without the sanction of God. Then what will we do for Him? We can't do anything without His sanction, and He is giving everything, then what can we do for Him? We can't do anything. But then comes the misconception, we can't do anything for God, or the other misconception that God is simply light or some undefined force, and then comes the misconception that spiritual life means to do nothing, because you can't do anything for God either because He's a person who's got everything or because He's not a person at all, and therefore any activity can only be for our own sake. So the misconception comes that spiritual life means doing nothing. So Arjuna is expressing this misconception and Krishna will address it. Krishna says, Patrang pushpang palang toyang yome bhaktya. What is it? Udachati. I left my brain in Denver. That if one offers me with love and devotion, fruit, flower, leaf, or water, I will accept it. So Krishna is asking that you do something for me as an expression of love for him. So spiritual life means activity in Krishna consciousness. Often people are surprised to see our devotees. That why are you living in this opulent temple? You should live, if you're spiritual, you should live in a hut or a cave. But that's also material. Even to live in a cave, that's also utilizing God's energy. If we say we'll give up everything, how can we give up everything? Because even the air we breathe, you have to utilize something. So if we say I'll give up everything, we give up air also. But we have to, if we're to live in this world, we have to accept the gifts of God. So it's not so much a matter of giving up everything, but rather utilizing everything in His service. That is the proper use of everything. Prabhupada gave that example that if a man walks into the bank and loudly announces, "Ladies and gentlemen, I hereby renounce everything in this bank." But it doesn't belong to you anyway. So the idea of renunciation is actually sinful. Because inherent in the concept that I am giving everything up is the concept that I own everything. That it's my property and I have the right to give it up. But we cannot renounce. On one hand, we cannot renounce because we can't renounce everything because we have to use something. As long as we're in the body, even if some yogis, they stop breathing, but still the body, they're dependent on the body as long as they're in that body for this situation they're in. They're in that body. So we cannot renounce everything. And the idea that, oh, I have renounced. But that means we were in the misconception of thinking that it belonged to me in the first place. So the idea that I will enjoy this material world, that is material. And the idea that I will renounce it, that is also material. So the proper understanding is to renounce the spirit that I am the enjoyer. Ishvaraham aham bhogi. I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. And to accept the proper understanding that I am the servant, nothing here belongs to me, everything belongs to Krishna, therefore we should use everything in His service, everything should be utilized for His pleasure. So why are we living in this beautiful temple? Some people may be envious. Why are you living in such a nice building? Because they're envious. They're thinking that we are enjoying. But no, we are not living here to enjoy. But this beautiful palace, this should be for the pleasure of Krishna. Everything should be offered for His pleasure. People are envious because they're thinking, we would like to enjoy. Why are you enjoying? You're supposed to be spiritual. I'm an enjoyer. You're supposed to be spiritual, so let me enjoy. Why are you pretending to be spiritual? Because they see everything for their enjoyment. But if we propose that you also come and join, you're welcome to come and live with us. But there are certain terms and conditions. You can live in this marble floored building on the condition that you do everything for the pleasure of Krishna. But they will not like to do. They will prefer to live in a shanty town with the opportunity for attempting to enjoy their senses rather than to live in opulence and engage their senses in the service of the master of the senses. So that is the diseased mentality. I shall enjoy. So especially Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he preached this to the world. That everything in the world should be utilized for the pleasure of Krishna. He taught how to do this. Himself, he was extremely renounced. Before he entered into his preaching leela, he was living an extremely renounced life of the same standard of Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who is praised as Sakshad Vairagya Murti. Namo Gaura Kishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaya. He is directly the representation. He is renunciation. He is the embodiment, you could say, of renunciation. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was living like that also. An extremely renounced life, eating once a day a little rice, eating it off the floor, chanting all day with the rain leaking in through the roof, chanting all day and night. Extremely renounced. No sense gratification whatsoever. But then, now we have to preach. So, for preaching, he wanted to utilize all the best things of the world to show people how all the best things of the world should be offered to Krishna. Nothing should be utilized for our own sense enjoyment. So this is actually very important for all of you preaching here in Southern California, where people are more than in, everyone in the whole universe is in under the impression that we are the enjoyers. We should live an opulent life. But here especially, this mood is very strong. We are the enjoyers. We should live an opulent life and enjoy ourselves. So, bhoga ishvarya prasaktanam tayapahrita chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhi samadhona vidhiyate. It is actually very difficult for people who are attached to material enjoyment and opulence to take Krishna consciousness very seriously. Their mind, it's very difficult for them to fix their mind on Krishna consciousness because their mind is diverted in so many ways by sense gratification. Bahu shaka hi anantastra. Buddhi avyavasayanam, that's the verse. Bahushak, their mind is diverted in so many different ways by desires for sense enjoyment, and the whole culture has been developed that there are innumerable things to do for sense gratification. They've invented and they're going on inventing newer and newer ways to titillate their senses. And people are enamored by this opulent way of life. So devotees, they have to teach that by the grace of God, who is in some way or other blessing America, that you have achieved such opulence, but you should understand who is opulent. Who is Dwarkadhish? Krishna has so many names, but here Srila Prabhupada liked to call Krishna Dwarkadhish. He is the master of all opulence. This Dwarka Leela, that is especially opulent. Krishna has Vrindavan Leela, Mathura Leela, Dwarka Leela. Dwarka Leela is especially opulent. But the Dwarka Vasis, or the inhabitants of Dwarka, they are not attached to that. Although living in opulence, they're not attached to that because they know that everything is meant for the pleasure of Dwarkadhish. So this should be preached to the people who have got so much opulence but no peace of mind, no happiness, because they think that I should be the enjoyer of this opulence. So we simply have to teach people that by the grace of God you have some opulence. Now you offer that all in the service of Krishna, and then you will be happy and Krishna will look after you. It is not that by giving to Krishna we become the loser. Rather, by Krishna's grace, we can enjoy millions of times more than those who are misers, those who attend to enjoy everything themselves. Let me get more money and spend it for my own enjoyment. But the pleasure that a devotee gets from offering everything to Krishna cannot be imagined by the most opulent materialist. So this culture should be taught to the people of the world. Be happy in Krishna consciousness. By the grace of God, there is so much opulence. Now engage that all in His service. Everything. We will not be the loser. It is not that if we give everything to Krishna that we shall have to live in poverty. But rather, we can live. Krishna never says that we have to live an uncomfortable life. But we can live whatever is required. We can take that is given by Krishna, whatever is required for our bodily maintenance, which isn't very much, and utilize all our energy, all our time, all our money in the service of Krishna. This is the simple formula for happy life. There's so much opulence in this land, but one thing missing: happiness, actual happiness. They equate happiness with sense enjoyment, but there's not even peace of mind. So people should be taught, what is actual spiritual life? Spiritual life doesn't mean going to the mountain and sitting in a cave. Spiritual life, it doesn't even mean giving everything away, but it means engaging everything in the service of Krishna. So Arjuna was under this misconception that we should spiritual life means stopping everything or giving up everything. But real spiritual life means to understand who is the transcendental proprietor of everything, to who everything should be offered, for who all endeavors should be made. That is Krishna. So this, we like to say Krishna. If we say God, that's a general term, and inherent in that term is the misconception that God is some sugar daddy in the sky who gives us everything. But rather, Krishna, He is the supreme enjoyer. We are all His eternal servants. We are meant for serving Him. And if we give everything to Him, all our energy, all our thoughts, our words, our actions, if we dedicate everything in His service, then only we can be happy, in no other way. There's nothing that we can do. Whatever Los Angeles has to offer, whatever, there must be millions of things, diversions, things to do. But none of them will make us happy. The only thing that can possibly make us happy is if we dedicate our lives in the service of Krishna. So this chanting of Hare Krishna, singing, dancing, taking food offered to Krishna, studying Bhagavad Gita in the mood of devotion, this will actually satisfy us. Nothing else can satisfy us. So this simple message should be understood. Arjuna, he wanted to run away from everything, but he could have never been satisfied by doing so. Rather, Krishna wanted Arjuna to fight for him, which Arjuna didn't want to do. It didn't seem like a very nice thing. But because he did that in the spirit of surrender, in the spirit of devotion to Krishna, then Krishna became satisfied by his activities, and Arjuna also became fully satisfied. And the whole world can be satisfied by understanding who is that person to whom all activities should be offered. That is Krishna. Hare Krishna. So I'll finish this discourse here. If there's any question about this, anyone would like to ask any question, please ask.
We don't even know Krishna, so how can I sacrifice myself?
You don't know Krishna? Then come here and learn. You should know Krishna. Where are you from?
I'm from Bombay.
From Bombay. Gujarati?
No.
Marathi?
No.
Oh, then?
Sindhi.
Sindhi. Sindhi means from Sindh. So Sindhi is there mostly Krishna bhaktas, no? So you should know Krishna. If you don't know, then take this Bhagavad Gita as it is, because Krishna is explaining himself here. Krishna is explaining himself in Bhagavad Gita so that we can know who he is and why we should serve him. Do you have this book, Bhagavad Gita as it is? Do you have this book?
Not this one.
You don't have. You have other editions, but that's maybe why you don't know Krishna. Because most of the editions of Bhagavad Gita, Hare Krishna, they're presented by people who may be scholars, but they're not actually Krishna bhaktas. They don't actually know Krishna. If you have Bhagavad Gita, you should know who is Krishna. So this is Bhagavad Gita as it is, in which Srila Prabhupada, who definitely knows who is Krishna, he has taught the whole world who is Krishna. And through this Bhagavad Gita as it is, he is giving us the opportunity to know Krishna, as he explains himself. So would you like to know Krishna? So you take this Bhagavad Gita as it is, and you can begin your service to Krishna by giving a donation for this book. That's also service to Krishna. And you please, are you living in Los Angeles? Me too. You came from?
I came from
Washington, D.C. So you can visit, we have a nice temple there also. Have you seen? Yes. So you, in Srimad Bhagavatam, in Bhagavad Gita also, that's recommended that Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, we should regularly hear Bhagavad Katha. Then we can know who is Krishna. So you please attend regularly, then you can understand Krishna. It's very difficult to know Krishna because he is fully spiritual and we are presently in material consciousness. But Krishna has given us the process of bhakti yoga by which we can know him. So you please take this opportunity. Vijay Prabhu, you brought in any Bhagavad Gitas? This gentleman would like Bhagavad Gita as it is. Can we provide one for him? This is Vijay Das. He's distributed more Bhagavad Gitas than you have eaten chapatis. So he can provide you with one. Any other questions? So many people come every evening for darshan, is it? That's nice. You all have Bhagavad Gita as it is? You all have? You're all reading this? You've all come to see Krishna? Is it? How will you see Krishna? How will you see Krishna? Yes. You won't see with your eyes only. We have to see through our ears. Shruti kshita pata, it is mentioned. Shruta means hearing. Ikshita means seeing. Pata means the path of. So we can actually see Krishna. Having a nice little bath here. We can actually see Krishna by hearing about him. Just like in English, if we understand something, we say, I see. Isn't it? Someone explains something to us, we say, I see. So if you see a picture of, just like they, you may see some scientific diagram, and you see it, but you don't understand it. And then someone explains it, and then you say, I see, isn't it? So before you saw it also, but you didn't understand it. So when it's explained, then we say, I see. So real seeing means to understand. If we only see with our eyes, then we may see, this is a nicely decorated statue. But when we hear from devotees, then we will understand, Pratima nahi tumi sakshat vrajendranandan. This is stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That one devotee, he said to Krishna, what happened, it's a long story, but anyway, Krishna was, this is the story of Sakshi Gopal. So Gopal, there was some vow made, and Gopal, the deity in Vrindavan, was called as the Sakshi. You are the witness. One man promised another that you can marry my daughter. And he said, well, you're saying in front of Gopal. Okay, I'm saying in front. So later he denied. No. Then There was anyone to witness? Yes, Gopal, he was witnessing. So they were living in Vijayanagar, which is South India. So it's a long way. So then the young man went back to Vrindavan and told Gopal, the deity, that you have to come with me to bear witness. He said, how can I go? I'm only a deity. I never heard of a deity walking. So he said, well, you're talking to me. If you can talk, you can walk. So come. Pratima nahitumi sakshat Vrajendranandan. You are not a statue. You are directly Vrajendranandan, Krishna, the son of Maharaj Nanda. So we can understand Krishna by hearing. You're all coming for darshan. If you come a little earlier, then you can get darshan through the ears. It is most important. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.